I did not realize like how much work and how much time goes into producing even one episode.
Welcome, and this is Far Betterment. Welcome and thank you for joining me on another episode of Far Betterment, the podcast where we learn new things about old friends and old things about new friends. First of all, I want to thank all of my supporters, everybody who's downloaded, who's subscribed, who's listened, and who follows us on social media. Thank you guys so very much for your support. It means everything to me, truly. And a special thank you to those of you who've taken the time out of your day to give us a 5-star rating. I cannot tell you how much it means to me that you would go out of your way to give us a 5-star rating and let everybody know that you enjoy and appreciate what we're doing here on Far Betterment. So thank you for that. And if you haven't done so already, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button. You can find us on your favorite podcasting platform by simply searching for Far Betterment. In this episode, I'm joined by Leah Hatter, pageant consultant and contestant, and also host of popular podcast, Sash Says. Be sure to check out Sash Says anywhere that you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and make sure you hit that subscribe button so you can catch all of the episodes, and don't forget to download the past episodes. So without further ado, here is Leah Hatter for Far Betterment. Hi, Leah. This is Andrew from Far Betterment.
Hi, Andrew. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I am fantastic. I am trying to make the most out of this marvelous Monday. How about you?
Same as well, actually. Yeah, we've been pretty busy today, so just getting some time to catch up here.
Oh, yes. Yeah, same over here as well. I'm trying to recover from a lazy weekend, and then now I'm trying to launch back into the week.
I love Mondays, though. Mondays are the best. Gives you a lot of time to catch up and not a lot of people out. It's nice when you work from home. I guess we got that luxury, though.
Yes, working from home is great, but then it can also be a little more difficult because you have to, you know, stay on it, and you don't have a supervisor breathing down your neck, so you have to remain very disciplined and passionate about what you're doing.
Exactly. That's the hardest part, I think people don't realize, is, yeah, you really have to keep yourself going. You really got to motivate yourself. It's harder sometimes than others.
Oh, yes. I definitely agree. And you especially have to stay organized as well. And you have to provide yourself more accountability than you would at a traditional office.
Oh, absolutely. How long have you been working for yourself?
So, sure. I have actually been self-employed since 2018, and I've really enjoyed it so far. It's been quite the journey, and I actually wear several different hats. So what you've mentioned and what we've already discussed, you know, I have to make sure that I stay on task and I stay passionate about what I'm doing. And then I just strive to get up and try to make a difference in people's lives. So I actually work as a college preparatory coach for teenagers. And then I am also a pageant consultant, pageant coach, and then I am a podcast host myself. So I'm always on the road, and I'm always busy, and I'm always networking with different people.
Oh, it sounds like you're absolutely busy all the time. And speaking of many, many hats, how do you find the time to juggle all that?
So, sure. Believe it or not, my degree is actually in business management. And so throughout the years, I've learned, even through formal education, several tips on how to stay organized. I am a huge advocate for making sure that I have a written calendar, and then also keeping an electric calendar, you know, through the Google calendar and Google Docs, et cetera. I also have set several alarms for myself, and then I've also been able to learn how to multitask. I am not very big on doing just one thing at a time, and I know that some people may fuss about that, but I actually believe in multitasking, and then also just getting up each and every day and motivating myself, you know, psychologically for telling myself that what I'm doing is making a difference and it's important. And so I have a to-do list every single day, and I strive to check off everything that's on that list.
I think that's a great tip. Writing stuff down is something that is really helpful. Seeing it on paper seems to work really well for me as well. Do you find that that's kind of one of the challenges or something that keeps you, how do I want to put this? I guess something that keeps you ambitious to see these things on a piece of paper and have to check them off, like you were saying.
So, sure, I do. There are so many good things to writing down, like, for instance, whether it's a task, making sure that it's written down so that you don't forget it, and also so that you don't get in trouble with your boss. For everyone who does work a traditional 8-to-5, I've been there, making sure that you're doing what you're supposed to do. But I think it can be very powerful to write down a particular goal or maybe even a dream. You know, you're thinking of different opportunities or different things that you want to accomplish. So definitely writing down a dream / a goal would be a fantastic thing to do. But additionally, with writing it down, I'm also one of those people where I start pondering different ways to reach that particular goal. So to me, like, writing it down is the first step, but then next you need to write down like the different steps to take in order to reach it. Because I think that if you write down a task for the day, or if you just write down a goal for the day and then walk off, you're more than likely not going to accomplish it unless you have some sort of plan or take the necessary steps to reach it. So definitely, yes, write it down first, but then take it even further.
So could you, and I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but can you give me an example of like a goal and how you visualize achieving and how you go through the steps to actually achieve that goal?
Sure, absolutely. Well, you are a podcast host, just like me. And so you know that podcasting is very rewarding, but it can be a lot of hard work.
Absolutely.
It is always a walk in the park. And there are so many different types of podcasts out there. Like, it's crazy how the podcast industry has just blown up. And so I actually had my own desire a few months ago to start my own podcast because I love podcasting. I love what it does. I love how it teaches you hard work and discipline, but then it also allows you to connect with people from all over your state, all over the US, all over the world. And so I thought, you know, I'm a huge fan of podcasting myself. I know that I have what it takes in order to host and produce my own podcast. And so how am I going to do this? And so first, I wrote down like the overall points of my show. And the theme for my podcast is entitled Sash Says, and it's a podcast dedicated to connecting pageant queens, entrepreneurs, and having conversations with people who are making a difference in their communities. And so I developed an overall point for the podcast. Second of all, I had to pick a certain platform to host my podcast on. And so I started researching different platforms, and a buddy of mine had actually pitched Anchor. And so for those of you who have a podcast, you're probably familiar with Anchor. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, I know what my overall goal is. It's to connect with people all over, specifically pageant queens, entrepreneurs, and people making a difference. Now I know what type of platform that I need to use in order to create it. And third, I need to figure out ways to actually put an episode together, such as building the script, how to record it, et cetera, and then uploading it into that specific platform. And then next, I also worked on different types of clips and musical sounds and called up that same buddy of mine who pitched the media platform to create my intro and my conclusion sound clips. And so he was able to give me some advice, but then also to produce those clips. And so once I had those steps put together, I was able to do a little more research about putting together the podcast, what I need to talk about on the podcast, how am I going to market the podcast, et cetera. And then I was able to create not only Sasha's podcast itself, but then my first episode. And then I started building from there. And so I think that's one of the best examples I can give you right there of writing down a goal, but then trying to figure out, you know, how am I going to reach this to accomplish what I want to do.
What do you think is one of like the biggest challenges you've found, or maybe even something that you've like loved? What's your favorite part about podcasting so far?
Okay, what I've loved or what a challenge is?
Either. Or actually, you know what? I'm going to ask you both anyway. So I kind of like to hear both sides. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I'll start with the bad news first and then go to the good news. Okay. The bad news is I did not realize like how much work and how much time goes into producing even one episode. Oh my goodness. So I have so much more respect for podcasters out there, especially for those of you who are entrepreneurs where that's like your sole income right there is podcasting. For maybe you're like self-employed, or maybe you're doing it for an organization or a TV show or whatever. So I think one of the biggest challenges was trying to figure out, you know, how am I going to create the time and like carve out time in my day to put together the episodes, but then also think of like the content for the episodes themselves.
Yeah.
You know, do I want to do just an individual script? Do I want to produce an interview title holders and just post the interviews? How am I going to put this all together? So I think one of the biggest challenges for me was, you know, finding the time, making sure I had the time to produce the episode, but then also like creating the content to post, because there were some days, I'm not going to lie, where I was thinking, okay, and I'll just explain kind of the briefly the format for my podcast. So actually I have individual episodes where I talk about certain things for self-improvement, motivational and inspirational episodes that are audio only. But then I also flip it back and forth from individual episodes to featuring someone by interviewing them. And so definitely creating content and then finding the time to create the content was a big challenge. What I love the most, I think, about podcasting or like podcasts in general is you get to meet so many creative and inspiring and just fantastic people from all over. So, I mean, you can interview people locally, you can do it at your state, you can do it nationally. People are now interviewing other people internationally. And I love, as a podcast host, having an easy way to connect, but then also like highlighting my guests' achievements and hearing their stories. And because hearing the struggles that they went through, what they've been able to overcome, that's just something that really inspires me. But, you know, then also it's just developed like a huge appreciation for, you know, being able to meet that person and then highlighting, like I said, their achievements and what they've been able to do.
So how did you get into pageantry? I mean, I know that's probably not a very easy road to, or an easy industry to break into. It seems, you know, I don't know much about it myself. So just, you know, you can educate me.
Oh, absolutely. I love pageants, and I know that some people despise them. Like, you know, as soon as whatever, a certain national pageant comes on TV, like they flip it over to something else. Or a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I know about pageantry, Toddlers and Tiaras. And I'm like, no, don't watch that show. So I'm like, oh, goodness. Or like one of my most favorite responses would probably be, oh, so you walk around with your nails painted and your hair done talking about world peace. Some people have approached me and said, oh, okay, you're a pageant queen, so you're dumb. And I'm like, no, I'm not dumb.
Wow, that seems really...
That's a stereotype.
Yeah, that's awful. That's really actually.
So I've had the best of both worlds. And you'll, if you meet and talk with more title holders, they'll tell you the exact same thing. They'll get polar opposite responses, either, oh my gosh, it's so great, what an honor, or, oh my goodness, I can't believe you showed up today. You know, that's terrible that you participate in pageants. But I actually got my start in pageantry in the sixth grade. It was the typical traditional middle school type of beauty pageant where it was based on facial beauty. So the contestants would go and get their nails done and their hair and makeup done, pick out a pretty dress, and they would walk across the stage and walk off. Typically, at my little school, around 28, between 28 to 31 girls would compete each year. And that first year that I participated, I didn't know anything about competing. I just knew that you had to look good and you had to get on stage and smile and then walk off. Unfortunately, I didn't place. I didn't receive anything but a participation trophy, and I actually cried on the way home. And I was very discouraged because I had this dream that I wanted to win a title. I wanted to do certain things with a specific platform, et cetera. I wanted to be Miss America back in the day. That didn't happen, but I have been able to do some other stuff related to pageantry. So I just kept competing. And in the seventh grade, actually placed as a top 10 finalist in the eighth grade, also in the ninth grade. And I kept placing, so either as like a top 10 finalist or a runner-up, or I was given side awards like the interview award or the photogenic award or a crowd favorite award, et cetera. But I did not win a title, as in I did not win queen until almost my sophomore year in college. So my start in pageantry actually began more toward, you know, late elementary, middle school, and then I did not win up until almost my sophomore year of college. So I truly am the face of perseverance, and it was quite the challenge for me to win my first pageant. But then once I did, I started seeking out, you know, ways to coach myself. I also asked some mentors to help me out, picking my outfits and giving me interview tips and finding opportunities to compete more pageants throughout different systems. And over the years, I've had a lot of success. But that makes me very humble, you know, that I started out competing for several years and then didn't win until almost a sophomore year in college, like I said. And so I just use my story to help inspire others that, you know, no matter what, if you have a dream or if you've set a goal, you keep at it until you reach that goal, whether it's in music, academics, sports, starting a business, hosting a podcast, you know, whatever it is, because I know from experience that if you have to fall on your face, or if you have to mess up, or if you lose a certain competition, just get back up and keep going.
What is that process like, the ups and the downs, and how do you improve to get towards that win? Like, what does that take?
Yeah, there are a lot of preparation principles that people have actually used in pageantry that you can apply to, like I said, sports, music, academia, art competitions, applying for jobs, et cetera. One of the first tips that helped me was to talk to people who had actually won pageants over the years. So one of the best pieces of career advice that I've heard too is, you know, if you want a certain type of career, put yourself around people who are successful within that career field and let them mentor you, let them coach you. So I got several people over the years to coach me who had won pageants. And so they would tell me, you need to pick out a dress that's flattering to your figure. You need to do your hair and makeup a certain way. Make sure that whenever you walk on stage, you're poised. You don't do this. You don't do this. Whenever you approach the judges, whenever you're on stage in front of the judges, you know, make sure that you have the right facial features, that you look at each judge. Don't walk off stage until the host or the MC has said, okay, thank you, contestant number so-and-so. So, I mean, there are different tips related to wardrobe, certain behaviors on stage, the way that you have a stage performance, and then also if you're competing in a pageant that has an interview, there are certain do's and don'ts for interview preparation. And to me, I always took interview very seriously, such as like applying for a job or a scholarship interview. Make sure that you've researched the pageant before you go and sit down and talk about that specific pageant or what you enjoy about the pageant, as you would a job. I mean, you wouldn't go to a company and sit down, not know anything about the company, and then start talking. That's not one of the best ways to set yourself up for success.
Sure.
You avoid talking about certain topics. You make sure that you speak in full, clear sentences. Make sure that you maintain proper eye contact with the judges and so on. And then, of course, whenever I was competing for the photogenic title, I would make sure that I visited certain photographers who had an established presence within the pageant industry to make sure that my pictures were considered suitable for competition. And so all of that to say, to water it down, I just started asking questions, started networking with people who were successful in the pageant industry, but then also worked with several mentors and coaches throughout the years to get me to where I am now.
Is there a lot of politics involved, or is it more based on merit?
Sure. I mean, I think it just depends on which system that you do compete in. There can be some politics, especially in smaller or local pageants. Some people may claim that, you know, if you have a certain last name or if you come from a certain family, then you're more than likely to win that type of competition. There are other competitions out there that I had avoided specifically because of the director's behavior. I had not heard good things about the director just as a person in general, the way she treated her contestants. Politics related to cheating or like manipulating the program to make sure a contestant wins. I mean, that's always out there, but there's always a chance for that to go on in, you know, other hobby or career areas or activity areas as well. So you just have to kind of be discerning and figure out which system you would like to participate in. And then, like I said, it's okay to ask around too, to see like what are the politics or what is the environment. But I am happy to say that for the most part, you know, I'm almost in my 30s now, started competing. I was about 11, 12 years old. For the most part, I will say that my pageant experiences have always been very good, unlike what they show on TV. A lot of the drama that you see on TV is kind of souped up to make the show or to get viewers. So you can't always believe what's on the media. And I know there are a ton of stereotypes too out there that show that, you know, pageant girls are either dumb or we're crazy or we're always competing against each other or we're shallow or we fight all the time. And sure, you'll meet a lot of contestants like that. But overall, from my experience, I've met some incredible people who are just out there enjoying what they do. And pageants are their chosen sport of choice. And so they're doing whatever they can to make sure that they're great contestants, they're great competitors, and that we respect each other and take the pageant competition seriously.
So I like that you brought up, you know, the misconceptions and things that people assume about pageants. What do you think the biggest ones are? And I know you talked a little bit about these, but also things that you would like people to know that they're getting wrong.
Sure. The first thing, I'll name three very briefly. The first thing that I think is a huge misconception is, like, from what I said, like what they see on TV, that pageant contestants were all vicious cat fighters. You know, like we're always after each other. We're always going after each other. We're always talking about each other negatively. And we're always trying to like one up the other one. A lot of times backstage, they'll show, for some reason, they show a lot of drama backstage. We each usually have our own cubicles where we're getting ready or, you know, we're trying to prep or we're trying to, you know, psych ourselves up for competition. Like, we don't have time to fight. You know, you've got to get dressed, whether it's, you know, getting into your evening gown or making sure that you are ready for the talent competition. So you got to put your talent stuff on. Or whether you're, like, I've been backstage before reviewing notes or index cards, reading things over and over to make sure I'm prepared for my onstage question. Like, we're too busy backstage to be fighting and carrying on and, you know, being dramatic and seeking out ways to, you know, harm or mess with the other contestants. A second thing that I've come across throughout the years, whether I've been personally victimized by it or I've heard other contestants talk about it, is this misconception that all pageant queens are airheads, especially when during a Miss Teen USA pageant, and you've probably seen the video yourself, there was a contestant who was asked about maps. You know, why are certain elementary school children, you know, not aware of where certain countries are placed on a map or something like that? And she, honestly, she just got nervous. She got nervous and she just started rattling off. And so I think from that aspect, there are so many stereotypes out there that think that when you meet a pageant queen, she's automatically going to be dumb or stupid or, you know, like an airhead, that she won't be able to talk about certain subjects that are related to politics or academia, et cetera. I know one pageant queen right now who is attending Harvard. And so she's studying a lot, spending a lot of hours earning a degree from Harvard. I've known several other pageant queens to graduate from law school, to become teachers, to become educators, to become politicians, powerful businesswomen out in the career fields. And so you can't automatically assume that because a young lady is involved in pageantry means that she's not smart or she's not capable.
Absolutely.
A third thing would be that I think a lot of people believe that pageant queens or girls who participate in pageants are only concerned with pageantry and competing. Like, we have no outside interests beyond the stage. And that's not true. We're very passionate about competing. We love to compete in pageants. But a lot of girls, I've seen them go and compete in a pageant and then immediately go backstage and change into their softball outfit, their softball gear, and go play in a ball game. I love to read and play the piano. And so as soon as I got off the stage, you know, I was ready to go practice my piano piece. I know a lot of other contestants who are heavily involved in sports or sports broadcasting and journalism industry. So they love football, baseball, basketball, golf, soccer, volleyball, et cetera. I know some other contestants out there who are really passionate about fitness. And so they know all sorts of fitness plans and fitness guidelines, and they're always in the gym. And so there's just this huge misconception out there that if you're a pageant queen, your interests are solely classified under competition, meaning that you only think about competing, you only think about looks, you only think about the fashion industry. And that's a great industry here in makeup. I appreciate all cosmetologists out there because we need you. But our interests expand beyond the stage. So, like I said, three brief things, misconceptions. One, that we're all vicious and we hate each other. That's not true. Two, we're not all dumb airheads. Mm-hmm. And three, you know, we have such a broad range of interests that go beyond the stage. We're not just concerned with interests that are categorized under competing.
Oh, absolutely. And I can tell just from speaking to you. I mean, your intelligence is apparent. I mean, I would never, ever, ever judge somebody like that in the first place. But I think
Well, thank you so much. I try really hard. Now, I don't know everything. I'm not trying to say I know everything, but I read. I have 3 college degrees. I've worked in education. I've worked in the business field. You know, I'm a coach, I'm a consultant, et cetera. And there are so many other amazing women out there who are just as brilliant, or even, I'll admit, they're way smarter than me. I just recorded an episode with a young lady from Rhode Island, and she attended, she graduated from Syracuse University and Brown University,
oh, wow.
2 very prestigious universities. And I'll tell you the truth, she started talking about some things that even went over my head. So, and I would just nod and smile. Yes. Okay. Yes. That's great. You know, but I was so happy to have her as a guest on my podcast, you know, so that just gives you, you know, a great example of what pageant girls are able to accomplish.
That brings up an interesting question for me. And I don't mean to be controversial or offensive in any way. So please don't take it that way.
Sure.
And if I'm out of line, please stop me. But, I think we live in a world, and this is the reason I bring this question up, is because I do think it's valid for the times. We live in a world where pageants, you know, they're very body conscious and they're very beauty conscious. And, you know, obviously there's nothing wrong with that. But we live in a time where people are leaning more towards being conscious of inner value and body positivity. And I'm just kind of wondering, how do pageants promote that? It sounds like you're very, very forward thinking as far as positivity.
Yeah.
And but how does the pageant promote that?
Okay, sure. No, I actually love this question because it is related to what's going on right now with mm-hmm. even the pageant industry. And I'll just use Miss America, for example. Miss America is a great program, and they had actually discontinued their swimsuit portion of competition. So for those of you who are listening and are not as familiar, you know, with pageants, or even with I'll just take the most traditional, and I think everyone knows Miss America organization, a part of the contestant score was how well she modeled the swimsuit, but then how fit she looked. And so there were certain criteria that they would judge and look for. To talk about health and fitness, to talk about promoting like a healthy lifestyle or a healthy self-image. There are a lot of pageants out there who do emphasize that through having some type of fitness competition, whether it's wearing a swimsuit, whether it's wearing a tank top and shorts, and so you come out and you model. I've seen other programs actually have you come out in some sort of exercise outfit, and instead of just like doing the cutesy modeling where you kind of point your toes and smile or whatever, you actually stop, you walk across the stage and you stop in front of the judges, and when you pose, it's not as strong as like a bodybuilder pose, but they have to pose in certain like positions where they have to emphasize the muscles on their arms or their calf muscles or their leg muscles, or even some girls will actually pose to where they're kind of flexing their back muscles. And so they're promoting, you know, getting out and being active and being healthy, or even working out in the gym. There are so many different types of pageant systems out there that do honor contestants who just don't feel comfortable walking across the stage in a swimsuit or even some type of workout outfit that's made of spandex or some type of stretchy material. Mm-hmm. So they've actually taken a lot of those competitions out. I think the way that a lot of pageant systems do promote living a healthy lifestyle is allowing contestants from different backgrounds, of different nationalities, of different ethnicities, be able to model some sort of outfit where their body structure is seen. But instead of judging them solely based upon like facial beauty or whatever, how sexy they look in the swimsuit, it's more focused on fitness. You know, how fit is the contestant? And then, like I said, there are some other pageant systems out there that have taken it out completely because there are a lot of contestants who they just don't feel comfortable wearing outfits like that. I have competed in a swimsuit competition. I didn't feel comfortable doing it. Mm-hmm. I just felt naked, to be completely honest. I was like, I don't like this. I feel like everybody's staring at me, et cetera. And I was even wearing a whole piece. So what I do personally, my platform, and I'm so glad that you asked this question, you know, how are pageants connected to like having this, you know, healthy self-image, et cetera. My platform is Healthy is the New Hot, promoting health, fitness, and positive self-esteem. I, just to give you a little snippet of my platform, I used to be a few years ago, almost 30 pounds overweight for my height and stature. It was to the point where I was not healthy. I was not fit. I was not watching what I ate, and I was in terrible, terrible health. I was very sluggish. I couldn't get anything done. I would drive back and forth to the office, and it took several cups of coffee. It took, you know, trying to stay focused, trying to figure out, you know, if I needed medication to pay attention to what I'm doing, et cetera. And I just felt miserable when I looked in the mirror. I was like, you know, it was beyond, I don't feel pretty. I mean, I just couldn't accomplish anything due to poor health. And actually researched my height and my weight and for my age. And like I said, I was about 30 pounds obese. And so slowly but surely, I developed an exercise plan. I said, I'm going to start working out. I'm going to start eating right. I'm going to watch the food portions that I eat. I'm going to cut out drinking sodas. I'm going to start drinking water. I'm going to start researching different types of exercises. And on social media, I would actually track my progress with the hashtag Healthy is the New Hot, and people started to follow. Well, luckily, I was able to start dropping some pounds here and there. I started shaping up a little bit, and I started feeling a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. And I just had this huge confidence boost. And I'm not going to say cocky because I didn't feel cocky. I felt confident. I felt good. I felt better about myself. I wanted to, you know, get up and, you know, get after my to-do list. And so, I started posting, pictures, like I said, with the hashtag Healthy is the New Hot, tracking my fitness story. But then I also started posting different quotes about, you know, feeling good and loving yourself, loving who you are. And my overall point that I would share whenever I would make appearances in a former state, and then even appearances now, is always tell girls to love who you are, love your body, but then also have a positive self-image. And instead of striving to be sexy and hot, why don't we strive to be strong and healthy? So why don't we start working on exercise plans, sleeping patterns, making sure you're getting enough sleep, making sure that you are putting yourself in a positive environment and that you're thinking well of yourself to be strong and healthy and to become the best version of yourself that you can possibly be, instead of just trying to lose weight and comparing your body to other bodies that you see on social media or in magazines or on TV. And so that was a way that I approached it personally for trying to, you know, promote this idea of having a positive self-image. But then also, like I said, with other systems, they've either cut out the swimsuit and fitness portions, or they started scoring it a little differently to kind of alter the way that a lot of contestants believe that, you know, in the past their bodies were discriminated against. And so there have been a lot of strides and changes over the years within just the pageant industry itself to promote more of becoming more accepting of all body types, instead of just like the stereotypical super skinny or super tall, whatever, pageant cookie cutter type of a body, or like that ideal type of contestant. Another way that some pageants have actually killed this stereotype of you have to look a certain way or you have to be a certain way. There are some pageant systems out there for plus size women, or women who do wear larger clothing sizes. There are also pageants out there for contestants who may have a physical disability. So there's actually a system called the Miss America wheelchair system. And then there are other types of names, but there are certain pageant systems out there that have created opportunities, you know, for everyone to feel included and to participate. And I think it's wonderful, like all the different directions that we're headed towards. There was another contestant who has participated, and she does not have this stereotypical body structure, and she's now like a plus size model who competes in pageantry. And so she uses her story to inspire other people who may feel like they better relate to her. And so just all over, I mean, there are so many different ways that pageant systems approach the whole swimsuit or, you know, fitness wear or negative self-image conversation.
I really admire your self-motivation, you know, talking about it. A lot of people, it doesn't occur to them like, oh, I want to change this about myself. How do I do it? And then they go and do it. I mean, that's kind of a unique quality. I'm not saying, you know, people can't or won't. I just think a lot of us don't. So I really admire that about you. Like, where do you think that self-motivation comes from?
Honestly, for me, just with my story in general, it was just the fact that I would get up and I would just have this bad attitude every day. You know, there's that motto out there that says, you know, you got to go out there and live your best life. Or, you know, a few years ago, it was YOLO, you only live once, or something like that. And, you know, I just started thinking thoughts of, you know, I'm not out there living my best life, and I do only get this one life. So why not live it to the fullest? And you can't live it to the fullest when you feel bad about yourself, or when you're just struggling every day just to get out of the bed, or, you know, when you're struggling to do simple things. Like, I would walk up the stairs and I would start panting like I'd ran a mile just walking up the stairs. I would start falling asleep during certain situations, you know, like even at work. And I'm not saying that like I laid my head down on my desk and fell asleep. And, you know, I felt sluggish and I felt miserable. And finally, I just woke up one day and I said, I'm sick and tired of feeling like this. I'm not living to my full potential. And so I just made up my mind. I said, each and every day, whether I feel like it or not, I'm going to make little steps toward my overall goal of losing this weight and becoming more fit. And I think anybody out there, no matter what your goal is, whether it's to lose weight, whether it's to apply for the dream job, whether it's to open a business, whether it's to, you know, start writing songs or whatever, like, instead of just trying to attack the goal all at once and becoming overwhelmed and discouraged, just get up and say, okay, I'm going to live my best life. I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to share my story with others, but then I'm also going to just start doing what I want to do, because you only get one life. So you got to make the best of it. And just little by little each day, even if it's baby steps, you start walking towards that goal.
I think that's absolutely Right. I mean, that's, I love that point of view. We only have one life and one chance to kind of do the best we can and live the life that we want to, rather than the life that everyone else wants us to. I love that answer.
Yeah, well, thank you. And something else I always share too, and I'm not trying to be morbid or weird. Mm-hmm. Honestly, like I've had close friends pass away suddenly. I've had family members pass away suddenly. I've had other close friends who, you know, they get a phone call in the middle of the day and they say, you know, so-and-so has passed in an accident or something happened and this person passed. We are not promised tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always keep that in the back of my mind, not to make myself depressed, not to be discouraged, not to, like I said, sound morbid or weird, but you're not promised tomorrow. Yeah. So you've got to make the best of today. And you've got to choose to be happy today. And you've got to choose to, you know, not be ignorant, but to have a more optimistic viewpoint of your life, you know, and to look at things from more of a positive perspective.
Oh, absolutely. And just to touch a little bit on your point, I think it does give you a different perspective when you've lost somebody, you know, close to you or that you cared about. It does kind of give you a different perspective. You do realize like your mortality and understand that your time here is limited.
You do. And then also like to help motivate me even further, I've had adults tell me throughout the years who were several years older than me, and they would say, you know, Leah, when I was your age, I wanted to do this, but I chose not to. Or, you know, Leah, when I was your age, I had the resources to do this or that, but I didn't want to. Or I had the ability to choose to pursue whatever this career path or this sport, and I just choose to turn around and walk out. And in the back of my mind, Leah, I'm always thinking, what if I had chosen to do it? Or what if I had said yes? Yeah. Or what if I had just tried? And I think that's another thing that's always motivated me too, is just try it, just jump in. And a quote that I live by daily is from Coach Wayne Gretzky. And he says, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
I actually love that quote.
I mean, if you're always saying no, or if you're not opening that door, the answer is always no. Like, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And you like that quote too. I think it's fantastic. Yeah,
I actually apply it to the podcast all the time. Writing to the people that I speak to and requesting guests and things. I mean, I think of that quote every single time I reach out to somebody. At least shoot your shot, you know, like you have to at least try.
Yes. And if you fail, that's one of the best situations to analyze and just think, okay, how could I do this better? Or just look for another opportunity. Okay, mm-hmm. So you tried, it failed, that door closed. There's always another open door. For me, throughout my life, for several years, pageantry didn't come easy. Competing didn't come easily. Like I said, I competed for years upon years upon years before I finally won. Instead of just walking through doors, I just had to go and find an open window. Or sometimes I'd find a closed window and open it and myself pry it open and jump out, you know, so not trying to, you know, sound silly, but sometimes there is no door. Like, you either have to create it or, like I said, go find a window and open that up and jump out. So,
oh, absolutely.
There's so many people that say, you know, you only get this one shot or you only get this one chance. And I mean, that is true. But then again, like, life is so full of second chances, and sometimes we don't even realize that the second chance, you know, is knocking on our door, or the second chance is maybe a phone call away. And so you've just got to put yourself out there and jump in and see what happens. Now, be discerning, okay? Be discerning, be smart about things. Some doors need to stay closed, some opportunities you don't need to pursue, because you can't always trust people in certain situations. But just overall, like, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. You just got to go for it. Just jump in and see what happens.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. I see failure personally as an opportunity. I mean, whether it's an opportunity to learn, whether it's an opportunity to try again, but, you know, try a different way. Or failure to me is lack of trying, you know. It's not trying at all. That's what real failure looks like to me. I think that didn't really apply to me a few years ago, though. I mean, that's why the podcast exists now. I tried. And actually, that swings me back around, not to segue anything, but I do want to talk about your podcast.
Okay.
Sash Says. I first of all, love the name. I absolutely love the name.
Thank you.
It's very catchy and really like sticks in your head. So great job there. But what kind of like sparked the podcast? And I know you talked a little bit about it, but...
Sure. So the overall theme of my podcast is conversations between pageant queens, mm-hmm. entrepreneurs, and people who are striving to make a difference in their communities. And it also has a few episodes featuring some of my personal thoughts. So mm-hmm. sharing my story about how I began my journey in pageantry, life lessons that I've learned along the way. So I actually have one episode that talks about... you know, that quote, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, like going ahead and jumping into whatever opportunity is presented to you. Other episodes where, you know, I'm simply just talking to the audience myself is a lot of motivational, inspirational, or kind of self-help tips. And you can actually apply these tips in pageantry or competing in pageantry, but I have listeners from all over the world. And some listeners, they have never competed in a pageant. They don't even like pageants, but yet they'll listen to some of my episodes where I'm just sharing, you know, some of my knowledge from, like I said, life experiences, and then applying it to whatever life field they want to apply it to. I also interview primarily guests who are related to the pageant industry. And this has actually been quite the journey too, because I've interviewed queens who have competed within the Miss America system, Mrs. America systems, queens from all over the United States, not just from, I'm primarily located in Tennessee, but from all over the U.S. I've also interviewed, his name is Tim Tialdo, and he has been on several major broadcasting stations. He actually co-hosted the Miss Teen USA pageant last year. He's also done some sports broadcasting, reporting, et cetera, for like the St. Louis Rams and certain sports teams. He's interviewed several well-known people, such as Joel Osteen, who's the megastar preacher, but then also other celebrities as well. And so it's just been very inspiring to me too. So I feel like it's been a great project. It's been able to hopefully help reach people from all over. And like I said, just being able to relate to others, share my story, but then also highlighting different achievements from people from all over the U.S. with their pageant industries. But then also being able to invite people on to celebrate their achievements as well. Because I feel like if I just talk about my story only, if I just talk about only my life lessons or only things that relate to me, I don't necessarily want to promote myself. I want to help people, but you know, I'm not in it for the fame or for people to know me. I'm just here to help spread my story and to give encouragement to others, but then also like give back to people who have invested in me as well. So anyway, that's pretty much Sasha's in a nutshell, is just conversations between pageant queens, entrepreneurs, people who are making a difference, but then also me just trying to give encouragement and advice to anyone out there who needs it.
Do you, like, I guess, what are like the things you've learned about podcasting so far through doing that? Do you, you know, like through your interviews and through producing? I know producing something I really was kind of like shocked about, like, wow, this is, I actually have to edit, I have to mix, I have to,
yes.
You know, like it was kind of a wake up call to me how difficult it was. For the same for you, you know, you talked about that in the beginning of the episode. It was eye opening, like how much work goes into it. What have you learned so far?
So sure. Just with podcasting in general, I have so much respect for everyone out there who does it, whether your podcast reaches 5 people or 5,000, mm-hmm. because truly it is a lot of hard work. I thought it was just something cute and fun where you just recorded yourself talking and you were able to just, you know, click a few buttons and then it's out there. For me, and I tell people, I'm very honest about it. I'm not as tech savvy. People are like, yeah, we know. We just heard it. I'm not technologically advanced or as, I can't even say that either. So anyway, I can barely work an iPhone. I'll just say that. I'm getting tongue-tied. I can barely work an iPhone. So like, you know, I can operate my personal phone, like social media. You know, I could work on Microsoft Excel, PowerPoint, things like that. But when it came to, like you said, producing this podcast, like, I didn't even know that things like Anchor existed. Yeah. And so, honestly, whenever I came up with, like, whenever you establish your business, you have a business plan. Well, I came up with this podcast plan where I had all these things written down for what I wanted to accomplish and, like, started working on how to build this podcast. So first of all, I needed to pick some type of platform. I didn't know that all these platforms existed. I thought that it was just Spotify and iTunes and that was it. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know things like Anchor existed. I didn't know that things like Anchor actually helps distribute your podcast. I didn't even know that there were programs that could help do that. So, I was able to learn about that. I was able to learn how to create content. And then I also made sure that if I did an individual episode where it's just me talking, to develop some type of script with informative and creative content. So I had to figure out how to write scripts, how to come up with content, because believe it or not, y'all, even if you do love to talk all the time like me, you sometimes, like, you run out of things to discuss or things to talk about. So you've got to find inspiration somewhere, or you got to, you know, figure out, okay, what am I going to talk about on the next episode? Like, what's the next subject? So I had to figure that out too. I called up my mentor buddy of mine, who's like a superstar in radio and broadcasting. He's been doing it for years and years and years. And he actually taught me a few tips about trying to figure out if I wanted to do like an audio only or a visual only or both. I didn't even know that they had like visual podcasts. I just thought that podcasts were audio only, you only recorded, and that, you know, you uploaded it to like your computer program of choice and that was it. Like, I didn't know that people could get on Facebook Live and have like a live recorded episode of their podcast, or get on YouTube and go live, or record themselves talking to their guests, you know, with the pod microphones and then uploading it. I didn't even know that that existed. And so that just kind of opened up my eyes for different types of podcasts that were out there. Another thing, like I said, was just time management, making sure that I had the time to work on each of my episodes, making sure that I had enough sound clips produced, making sure that I was researching, too, the different types of podcasts out there. And also, I had to figure out, you know, what made my podcast worth listening to, because if it's not entertaining, if it doesn't have, you know, some type of music or some type of like inspirational quote or some type of fun sound effects or whatever, people aren't going to listen to it. And so I started researching a little bit more, and then also marketing my podcast. My podcast was a little challenging because I was like, okay, where do I talk about my podcast? Do I upload it on my website? Do I talk about it on social media? Like, where are the podcast listeners out there? Like, where are my potential listeners? And so I had to teach myself a little bit about that too. So, your original question was, what all did you learn? I mean, that was pretty much it, was just the A, B's, and C's of trying to figure out how to produce it, how to make it, but then also how to maintain my audience too, for making sure that it is informative, it is inspirational, it is entertaining, and then also like how to market, because you've got to make sure that people know about your podcast, because you want to have a presence. You want to expand your audience. And so that in a nutshell was basically all that I learned, and I'm still learning each and every day. I'm still learning new tips and tricks and techniques, and it's not at its overall best point. I'm not the best podcast host. I don't have the best podcast. I'm not trying to act like I have the best, but I do work very hard to try to produce, you know, good quality content.
It's your baby and you're proud of it.
Yeah.
And you should be. I think if you're not proud of it, then you kind of know you need to change something. So I love hearing somebody. I mean, I haven't had a whole bunch of podcast guests, you know, or people that do podcasts. It's pretty rare. Podcasters want to be on someone else's podcast. You know, that doesn't happen often. So I always like having people on, because it gives us like something to talk about. We have something in common immediately. You know, we both do yes. this thing and we both love what we do. And so it's always so nice to hear somebody who's like very proud of what they've done and very proud of like what they've created. And they work really, really hard to do it, you know, and they just love it. And whether they're making money or not, like it's just the thing that they love to do. Like I love to hear that. So I appreciate hearing that from you. It makes me feel like, yep, somebody gets it. Like somebody understands.
Yeah. It makes you feel like we're in this together. Another tip that I learned, probably honestly, one of the most important tips that I have learned, like once you get your podcast established mm-hmm. is for those of you who don't have a podcast, but maybe you are in marketing or maybe you monitor like your website's stats or your social media stats or whatever. There are certain platforms out there, even with podcasts, where you can view like how many downloads, how many people have listened to it throughout the day, the different areas that your podcast is reaching, et cetera. So one of the best tips I learned from someone else was do not be so focused on the statistics of your podcast. Like it's great to keep up with your audience views and your downloads and your plays and things like that. But you can become so overwhelmed in the stats side of it that you kind of lose focus on, you know, like going out there and just making a difference. Or like for me, I feel like I'm providing some type of inspirational service to others. And so it is easy to get wrapped up in the stats themselves, but then also you don't ever want to like start comparing your stats with someone else's stats. And I see so many people, even on social media, they're like, oh, well, I got 500 plays today, or I got, you know, 1,000 people to listen to my podcast. If I really concentrate on like what other people's accomplishments and what they're doing, like I'll start to feel discouraged. And so I just celebrate my small victories. I'm like, if I get 5 plays today, that's fantastic. If I get 500, that's fantastic, because I would rather have good quality content that has helped make a difference even in one person's life versus, you know, sending out an episode where 1,000 people listen to it, but they really didn't get anything out of it.
Yeah. Well, and actually even to expand on that and not to take over, but just to piggyback off that a little bit is consistency. I've really learned that like consistency, if you skip a week, people notice. If you skip 2 weeks, people notice. Yeah. And it gets easier for you to skip if you do. It's just, you know, how we are. It's human nature. Once we get out of a habit, it's really easy to kind of say, well, next time, not such a big deal. I'll skip again. So consistency is absolutely key with a podcast. It's just like YouTube. You have to post no matter what, whether you think it's, I mean, obviously you want quality, but consistency has been for us here the most important aspect.
Yes, consistency. And then also I think some people, maybe some hosts would become offended, you know, if somebody posted, hey, you haven't, you know, posted like Motivational Monday. You always have like a Monday episode. To me, don't get offended by it. Be proud of that, because it's like there is somebody out there who is taking the time to sit down and listen to my episodes and what I'm doing, is keeping up with what I'm doing. So like take it as a compliment instead of just, you know, spitting on that comment or getting offended.
Absolutely. I mean, somebody's noticing that you're not posting because they care about it. I mean, that's, and that's what you want.
Yes. And I think another great thing that I learned too, I've learned so many things that I've mentioned already, but another thing that I've learned is there are so many people out there who are obsessed with like getting top ratings, especially on like the Apple Podcasts will allow you to rate, Spotify will allow you to follow. And sometimes people will get, you know, 5-star ratings with like these great, whatever, like great explanations for like why people listen to it and et cetera. And then some people will get these really low ratings, and then people will like write negative things about the podcast. And I've seen so many people post, like I keep saying social media, cause that's mainly where everybody goes to now. They'll post on their social media, I can't believe that, you know, this person posted this and they said this, this, and this about the podcast. Instead of like letting negative comments tear me down or discourage me, what I do is I kind of listen in between the lines. So if the person is saying, I hate this podcast because what you talk about is stupid, then I'm going to start like evaluating my content. If someone says, I can't really hear her whenever she talks on the mic, then I know to adjust my volume. Yeah. And so instead of taking it as like criticism itself, you know, take it as more of like constructive criticism. Like they're teaching you what can help make it better. And also you've got to realize too, like no matter what you do, like some people you just can't please. So, I mean, you can have these great guests, you can have the best sound clips, you can talk about the best stuff, but some people overall, they're just never going to be happy with your content. So just leave it at that. But if you ever get negative comments, I mean, even if it's, I have some friends who are authors and they have books out there, like don't spend 30 minutes fussing about how someone hated your book. Like listen to what that critic has to say. And then also feel honored that they took the time to post about your book, because it's, even though it's negative publicity, you can always twist it into good publicity. And so I use the same techniques with my podcast. You know, I'm always trying to listen to what, you know, people want, and to kind of see from researching other podcasts, you know, how can I make mine better?
I need to heed your advice a little more, because I learned that the hard way. You know, I had somebody tell me I said too much, and it just really got in my head for like weeks. And every time I would try to record an intro and I heard myself say I would re-record it like 1,000 times trying not to say and I couldn't get myself to stop saying and I started reading techniques on how to stop saying that word, and I still do it. And my wife,
I'm an ummer myself, and I say absolutely way too much.
It's crazy, and it shouldn't really bother us that much, but it did. It got in my head, and I wish I would have spoken to you weeks ago. Probably would have made a big difference.
Oh, sure. Well, I love hearing that, but then I'll also tell you, I have people, you know, who invest in me and give me constructive criticism, and I don't always like hearing it, but you know, if it helps make me better or help me improve my product, then by all means, you know, rip it apart and tell me what I can do. But I think too, related to you saying too many times, I say way too much. I was getting interviewed for something else, and I listened to myself, and I'm like, how many times can I say in 5 minutes? It's ridiculous. I say absolutely way too much. I probably said absolutely 15 times in one of my own podcast episodes. I'm like, all right, note to self, I'm not going to say absolutely that much. And then I just said, but anyway, I think it's progress versus perfection. And also it shows like a more personal side of you. I mean, yes, you need to be professional, and there are some podcasts out there where, you know, they're just having fun. They don't care about making money. They're just out there, you know, kind of entertain, make everybody laugh. But if you are trying to be more professional, there are some situations where you just got to let it roll. And then it does show people that you are a person, you know, you're personable, you're approachable, and they can relate to you. Or, you know, if I were you, I would express that on one of my episodes. I was working on this podcast, trying to figure out ways to avoid this and that, but I just kept rolling with it. And I think people will relate to you more. Like, and I've noticed too, even from a national audience, they love to relate to the host, but then they also want to know that they're not alone. Oh, yeah. Well, I say too in my office presentations, or, you know, I say this specific word way too many times. So if he's doing it on that podcast, then, you know, I don't feel like I'm such a freak, you know, like somebody out there is doing the same thing. So we're all in this together.
I think that's a great point. That's a really great point. Yeah, I guess I never really looked at it that way. I mean, I got over the thing, obviously, since I haven't stopped. But yeah, I guess I didn't look at it that way. So, you know what? Thank you. I appreciate that. That's very helpful. There I go. I did want to ask you, though, since we're running up on an hour here, and I promised you an hour, what's one of the proudest moments you've had so far in your podcasting career or pageantry? I think I can guess your pageantry one, but I'll let you answer that.
Oh my goodness. Some of my most proudest moments. And there I go. Anyway, we're just going to let it roll.
That's right.
One of the biggest accomplishments that I'm really proud of is, of course, like I've mentioned, Tim Fialdo earlier. Never in my wildest dreams, and I grew up in a smaller town in Alabama, went to college in Arkansas, and I live in Tennessee, and I just call myself like the girl next door. I never in a million years thought that I would be able to interview someone of that caliber. Like, if you had told me even a year ago, Leah, you're going to be able to interview this guy who has been on several television networks, including NBC, who has interviewed several Miss USAs and has even co-hosted Miss Teen USA, I would have been like, you are kidding me. Like, that is the funniest thing I've ever heard. Like, stop speaking that blasphemy. Like, that's never going to happen to someone like me. So I think that's a major accomplishment, is being able to interview someone of that caliber, but then also other queens out there. Another proud moment that I've had in pageantry is I've noticed that some queens out there are now starting to do things that kind of reflect either my pageant business pages or things that I've done in my podcast, or like if I'm interviewed in a magazine, they'll go email that magazine and see if they can get an interview as well. And so there's that quote out there that says, like, imitation is the biggest form of flattery. Mm-hmm. And so I've noticed that there are other people out there who are starting to kind of look at me as someone who is accomplished or someone who, quote unquote, has made it. And so I never thought either that someone would think of me as so accomplished to the point where they would start copying my techniques and copying the things I do, because I have had to bust my butt to get where I am now. And, you know, I don't think of myself as like having ultimately made it. There are other people who I look up to that I think are successful and have made it in their career field or in pageants or whatever. So to be copied by someone doesn't offend me, but it kind of, you know, it's kind of flattering to me, but then it's also inspirational for me to tell myself to keep going with what I'm doing, because obviously it's important enough to that person to where they feel like they're able to do it too. A third thing that I think I'm most proud of within pageantry is just being able to share my story, even with my platform, with losing something as simple as, well, it's not always simple, but losing weight was just one aspect of my life that I really wanted to work on and strive to obtain that goal. And by simply posting pictures of myself in the gym or watching whatever I ate or posting my progress with the hashtag healthy is the new hot, I started getting a lot of DMs, direct messages, for those of you who don't know what a DM is, direct message. And it was people asking me tips and advice for how to lose weight, related to diet plans or working out in the gym, or, you know, could you give me certain types of advice related to losing weight, et cetera. And so I was able to provide advice to help someone better improve their lifestyle and just to help them feel better about themselves. And I never thought of myself as a health guru, and I still don't. I'm not a health genius. I'm not trying to act like I'm a health genius. I just know some tips that work for me and some general tips that I can give to others to kind of help them get launched with their either weight loss goals or striving to be healthier goals, et cetera. And so I think those are the top three things that I'm most proud of. And of course it is to, I think through my podcast, I'm very open about my faith too. So it's given me a platform just to talk about the Lord in my life, what he's been able to accomplish through me. And of course, using that platform to help reach others for the gospel and just to share my story about my faith in God and what all he's allowed me to accomplish. And so it kind of gives me a sense of a purpose and a calling to help others, but then also share my faith as well. So they're the top three things. And then of course, trying to encourage others to live a healthier lifestyle. And then I think the ultimate thing overall is just having these different platforms to share my faith.
Oh, I think that's amazing. And just from speaking to you, I can tell you're putting a lot of good out into the world. And as a human, I can appreciate that. I mean, we need plenty of that at all times. So I appreciate that. And thank you. On a personal note, thank you so much for being on and reaching out. And it's very humbling when people reach out to me to be on. And I know you know the feeling. It's amazing to have people want to speak with you and get to know you and have a conversation with you. So thank you for doing that.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. You know, I really appreciate being on and, you know, rambling about different ways of, you know, which I've been able to help people and, of course, give some encouragement for everybody out there who's striving to reach that goal. And, of course, with your podcast, I absolutely love your podcast. I think what you're doing is fantastic. And just every new episode, you're able to bring like some new flavor, or you're able to bring on somebody who's really accomplished. And I love the way that you're approaching, like helping everybody else kind of network with these great people all across the country and then internationally as well. So I do commend you on your podcast too. So thank you for what you do as well.
And that concludes another episode of Far Betterment. Thank you to all my listeners. Thank you to all my subscribers. And thank you to everybody who's rated the podcast so far. If you haven't subscribed, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple, anywhere that you listen to podcasts, including where you're listening to podcasts right now. And please, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. It helps us tremendously. I can't tell you how much it helps us. If you want to give us anything less than 5 stars, please don't. There's really no reason.